Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Right Now Radio on 3CR 855 AM. I'm Anna Dorovich, and with me in the studio tonight is Evelyn Tadros.
Hello, everyone.
And we'll be with you until 6:30 tonight, and we hope that you can stay tuned. Right Now Radio is a weekly show dedicated to discussing human rights issues, news and events from across Australia. Last Thursday was a very important day on the human rights calendar, being the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, which was marked across Australia by White Ribbon Day. But did you know it was also the start of an annual 16-day international campaign to end violence against women? The 16 days campaign ends on International Human Rights Day, which is next Friday, reminding governments and people around the world that gender abuse is a human rights issue. And joining us on the show tonight is Fiona McCormack, CEO of Domestic Violence Victoria, the state's peak body for family violence services for women and children. We'll be having a chat to Fiona about the impact and prevalence of family violence in Victoria and what needs to be done at a state level to curb the violence and better protect victims. Welcome, Fiona.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Not at all. First up, though, let's just take a quick look at this week's human rights news. Ev, kick it off.
Well, as you all know, we just had our state election on Saturday and the result has come in and we have a coalition government. So all of you may be aware that last week on Right Now Radio, I interviewed Stephen Stevens from the Law Institute of Victoria about a range of different issues, and we gave a bit of a comparison on the different parties in relation to different human rights issues. So it's very important to keep aware of what is going on. Ted Baillieu has already announced that he'll be starting his agenda by boosting police numbers, auditing hospital waiting lists, increasing the transparency of government, establishing an anti-corruption commission, and drafting new laws on baseline sentences reviewing child protection. He's also announced that he'll be abolishing suspended sentences for serious offences, which is slightly different to their original policy of abolishing suspended sentences, full stop. Mm. So the Human Rights Law Resource Centre has actually released a 10-point policy plan to make sure the coalition responds with respect to human rights issues in a number of ways. So it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens in that space.
Definitely. And in another very important win for the not-for-profit sector, the High Court has yesterday handed down its decision in the case of Aidwatch Incorporated and Commissioner of Taxation. Aidwatch is an organisation that campaigns for effective foreign aid policies through the generation of public debate. It was appealing a decision of the Commissioner of Taxation to revoke its endorsements as a charitable institution, which would effectively strip it of various tax concessions. The Commissioner did this after finding that Aidwatch was not a charitable institution, as it did not itself distribute aid, and secondly, that it was achieving its objects effectively through campaigning, which amounted to a political purpose. The Commissioner's decision was overturned by the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, and then it was restored by the full federal court. So Aidwatch took it to the High Court. And the High Court held by majority in a really good decision that Aidwatch was a charitable institution, finding that the generation by lawful means of public debate on the efficiency of foreign aid policies is itself beneficial to the community, and that there was no general rule excluding political objects from charitable purposes.
Great case. It will have huge implications on the not-for-profit sector and allow them to actually be able to do political activities and political campaigning. So it's a very, very important case for the not-for-profit sector.
Absolutely. And in other news, Immigration Minister Chris Bowen is scheduled to go to Geneva this month at some point to discuss Labor's proposed Timor solution with the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. The plan to build a regional processing centre in East Timor to process asylum seekers who should really be processed on our shores in accordance with our obligations under international law has to date not been that well received by the UN. So it will be interesting to see what comes of these talks in Geneva.
And also in human rights events, do not forget next Thursday, is it?
Next Friday,
is Human Rights Day, 10th of December. So there are lots of great events going on. One particular event which you should definitely get to is the Multicultural Arts Victoria Rights by the River, which is a multicultural music festival, and it's outdoors behind Flinders Street Station, and there'll be a range of huge guests, including Crump Workshops, which is my personal favourite, as well as Believe in the Beat, Cornerstone, Hip Hop Choir, Choi featuring Agency, Culture Connect and Gorilla Step, who are an awesome band. So get down there next Saturday.
Fun. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio.
Hello there. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Anna and Evelyn on Right Now Radio on 3CR. And we're joined tonight by Fiona McCormack, the CEO of Domestic Violence Victoria, which is the peak body for Victorian family violence services. Welcome, Fiona.
Thank you.
I'd like to just start off by perhaps asking you a little bit about Domestic Violence Victoria. For example, when and why it was set up and what some of its purposes are.
Okay, so we have a membership of a diverse range of services providing responses to women and children across Victoria who have experienced family violence. And we're a young service, but also an old service. And by that I mean that we existed for 20 years as a loose coalition of family violence services that would come together and take turns at representing the sector on a statewide level. And in 2002 we received funding, and that's when we formally became a peak body. So, yeah, and some of the things that we do are we represent our membership at a statewide level on relevant advisory committees, and we facilitate coordinated responses representing the sector to government regarding relevant issues, policy initiatives, etc. And we support practice development for family violence services as well. So we have a code of practice for specialist family violence services. And another initiative we have is media awards in partnership with Note of Violence, the peak body for men's services, and also CASA Forum, the peak for sexual assault services. And that's about acknowledging good reporting of violence against women in the media.
Oh, that's really important.
Yeah.
How long's that been going for?
We've only held one, and that will continue over the next 4 years. So.
It's a good incentive to journalists to give it the attention it deserves.
Yeah.
And what about the actual member organisations? Who are they comprised of? What sort of services?
Very diverse. So we've got refuge services, outreach services, community health services, services that provide counselling, etc. Quite a diverse range.
All right. Well, as you obviously know, we're right in the middle of the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender Violence, which is an annual international campaign. And the purpose of the campaign is really to draw attention at a local, national and global level to the different types of violence that women face in violation of their human rights. What can you tell us about the forms of domestic violence that women and children face? How does it manifest? How prevalent is it in Victoria, for example?
Okay. Unfortunately, it's rife. So violence is the most significant contributing risk factor to the health and well-being and the lives of Victorian women before they reach 45. So I think for anybody with small daughters, granddaughters, nieces, etc., little sisters, I think it's really concerning and a sad indictment on us as a community that the greatest significant risk factor to their lives is not drug and alcohol or road deaths, but actually violence, often at the hands of somebody with whom she has a relationship. One in three Australian women will experience some form of relationship violence in her lifetime, and it costs us. It costs the Victorian economy $3.4 billion annually. That's not just so far, that's every year.
Every year.
And it costs the Australian economy $13.6 billion every year. The reality is that it is far too common in our community.
Is the domestic violence usually taking place on a spouse level or relationship level, or is it, you know, mother, father, child, for example?
Violence in the family is about the imbalance of power. So we can often see that most commonly it happens intimate partner relationship, but in relation to elder abuse, sometimes we see that perpetrated by different family members. But primarily, it's an issue perpetrated by men, and where women and children are victims. And the community, both men and women, can feel really uncomfortable about that because they think, oh, hang on, you know, we're getting into man bashing here, you know. And I think that's why so many myths about it exist, because people feel really uncomfortable with that reality that the research tells us. But not all men choose to be violent. In fact, most don't. And I guess until we have the courage as a community to look at why it is that some men choose to be violent, this will continue to go on and, you know, be far too prevalent for our community.
Do cultural, geographic or socioeconomic factors play any role in the prevalence of the violence that you see?
I guess that's part of the myth, is that it only happens in certain cultural backgrounds or certain socioeconomic backgrounds. But there can be exacerbating factors, but primarily it is comes down to gender. So it happens in, research tells us that it happens in communities across the world, where two things occur, where there are disrespectful attitudes towards women, particularly tied up with sort of macho stereotypes of masculinity, and also where there are weak sanctions, so when perpetrators are allowed to get away with it. So it's really important that when women do come forward, and particularly in public cases where we see women making claims about forms of, you know, abuse that they've experienced, that we send strong messages that that is unacceptable, because we often see people in very high profile positions excusing or justifying that because she's a particular type of woman. And that sends strong messages not to just victims of violence, but to women who are victims in the future. This is why we see women who say, who are reluctant to come forward or who blame themselves. Mm-hmm. It also sends strong messages to men that if they do choose to behave in this way, you know, there won't be too many repercussions, or that in certain circumstances it's justifiable. So,
and it perpetuates the discrimination,
yeah,
you know, from where it all stems.
Yeah.
Now, there was a campaign in the lead-up to this recent state election to put domestic violence firmly on the state agenda. Can you tell us a little bit about this campaign and what, in your opinion, is needed at a state level to better respond to and combat this entrenched gender abuse?
Sure. OK. So our platform had three planks. So we were looking to have ongoing commitment to the current policy framework, or the policy framework of the previous government. So there's been a lot of investment in developing a coordinated long-term plan that links up family violence services for women and children and for men, housing services, police, courts, etc. And it's based on evidence. We've never ever had that before. So we wanted to see that continued, and another plank was support financial funding for the outcome of the wage claim, the wage equity claim that's been submitted by the Australian Services Union for the community sector. The family violence sector is family violence workers need very sophisticated skills. They deal with risk and legal issues and trauma, and have to engage with hospitals and a whole range of different health and police services, etc. But on average are paid $10,000 under the national average wage.
That's terrible.
Yeah, so we really think for the sustainability of our sector, it's really important that we're paid enough. And also, so the third area and the key area of our focus and attention was around responses to children. So our services on a daily basis are seeing kids who have been exposed to family violence really being failed by the system. So we are keeping in mind that family violence is a factor in more than half of the substantiated child protection cases and was a factor in 62% of the cases of child deaths known to child protection in the last financial year. We think it's really important that responses to kids who have been exposed to violence in the home is speedy and comprehensive.
As you know, the Victorian Ombudsman's investigation into the Department of Human Services child protection system revealed that it was a system that was absolutely stretched to capacity and not coping. What are some of the impacts of that?
The impacts are that it can be difficult to engage with child protection services in a timely manner. So because kids who have been exposed to violence are at risk, we believe that there needs to be a strengthening. So that was one of the recommendations of the Ombudsman's report, and we support that, that we need to, because there is such an overlap between child protection and family services, that we need to support greater integration. And so that was one of the key asks of our election campaign, that we would introduce the 20 new positions to support early intervention and risk assessment from the resources and from the relevant services. And we thought that would be a better utilisation of the current resources that exist.
That sounds good. I had an experience just the other day when I was on the train to work where I had a lady come onto the train at Jolimont Station, and she was not a great state. She was quite visibly distressed, and she had a page of all the different crisis accommodation centres on a booklet that she had with her, and she was making phone calls one by one through each crisis accommodation. And I sat there and listened to her as she was knocked back one after the other, and it was appalling. And this woman was already over a month pregnant. She'd slept rough the night before, and, you know, it was a freezing cold, raining night. And then she was in this terrifying predicament. And it made me realise that there's a huge connection here in terms of protecting victims of domestic violence to the housing situation, the crisis accommodation situation in Victoria. Mm. And I thought perhaps you could share your views on that.
Yeah, I don't think people realise that children and women and young people leaving violence in the home, fleeing violence in the home, constitute the most significant cohort of homeless across Australia. And so what we see, particularly now for our refuge system, so we have real difficulties in exiting women from refuge because of housing affordability, just impossible to get women into other accommodation. And so what we see is then difficulty getting women into refuge. And so we have women and children highly traumatised. Usually there's been a fairly significant event that they've been a part of. They leave the violence and they can't even get into a family violence service, and they're hotel hopping and, you know, we see many women and children returning to violent relationships because they just can't get housed. So there is a very strong link between family violence and homelessness.
How do you think that Ted Bailey is going to respond to these challenges?
We don't know. We didn't get a commitment to policy directions before the election, and we haven't met yet, obviously. However, we are keen to meet with the relevant ministers and continue our relationship with them, and hopefully work in the way that we have become used, which is in Victoria. There's been an incredible reform that's been begun over the last 5 or 6 years, where we've had new family violence legislation, a comprehensive beginnings of a reform. And Victoria actually stands out nationally and internationally as a model, and we would really like to see that built upon. And we think that given the extent of this issue and the effects, that it's a really important that it is built upon.
And I suppose there's also then the idea that if we have a successful model here in Victoria, it could be rolled out across to the other states. One of the things that Sex Discrimination Commissioner Elizabeth Roderick's been really pushing for has been a call to the federal government to release and implement and fund a national plan to reduce violence against women and their children. This has been going on for some time. There is a plan that's been drafted. It hasn't yet been released. But she's also called for a suitable independent body to be charged with monitoring and evaluating the implementation of that plan, which I think is a great idea. As the peak advocacy body in Victoria, and you've obviously been pushing for improved coordination of services at a state level, do you kind of see the need for coordination at a federal level as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, violence, and particularly the causes of violence against women, doesn't begin and end at state borders. Particularly in relation to prevention, it's really crucial that we have partnership with the Commonwealth in being able to prevent violence against women. And the plan that was submitted to the Australian government by the advisory committee that developed it is a ripper. And we would really encourage the Commonwealth Government to pick up every recommendation that was offered because we think it's exciting and it could really make a big difference to a really important issue.
How is it that your organisation engages men who do commit violence against women? How do you find that they respond, and what do you think is needed for them to change?
Sure. We don't actually engage in that work, but we work really closely with the peak body that oversees services that do. So that's part of the strength in Victoria, is that we work really closely with men's services, and they work from exactly the understanding of the causes and dynamics of violence against women as we do, which is based on evidence. And so that forms a really strong partnership. Look, I guess it's really important. There's lots of theories about the strengths and weaknesses of such an approach, but women want it. Women say, women often don't want to leave relationships because they actually love their partner, and they say, we just want the violence to stop. And these are really important. They're also really important because we need more men taking up responsibility for men's violence against women, and that's what's really admirable about organisations like No to Violence and their member services.
Do they manage to get their message out to younger men, to boys even? I mean, since the whole problem really starts from discrimination against women and this view that women are somehow less worthy, weaker, is there a role to play, in your opinion, perhaps in school education, primary and secondary, in changing that base kind of perception?
That's one of the reasons why we sought commitment for the statewide policies that existed in the previous government, is because we actually had a prevention plan. And it identified a range of different sites where we needed work and to begin to prevent violence against women. And shaping attitudes through education was part of that. And it's also part of the draft plan that's been put to the federal government. So absolutely, we support that.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
That was a track by the Be Good Tanyas called It's Not Happening. And before that, you were listening to Fiona McCormack, the CEO of Domestic Violence Victoria, discussing the endemic abuse faced by women and children. If you weren't able to catch it all, you can download the show as a podcast from 3CR's website, www.3cr.org.au/podcasts. Be sure to tune in to Right Now Radio next Thursday at 6 p.m. for part two of our 16 Days campaign special, as Laura Vines explores the human rights issues surrounding Victoria's strip club industry. She'll be looking at the sexual exploitation of women in Australia and tackling the question of how best to support women's dignity and agency whilst battling all forms of discrimination and abuse within the sex industry. So that should certainly be a very interesting show, and we encourage you to tune into that one. I'd like to thank you again, Fiona McCormack, for coming into our show and really providing some sobering but very important information on the situation that women and children face in Victoria.
No, thanks for the opportunity and for highlighting this issue. It's
Not
great.
Not at all. Good luck for all your work.
Cheers.
And don't forget, next Friday is Human Rights Day, and we'll be doing a very special broadcast from the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, so make sure you tune in to that.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.